welcome back to the Challenge Final Reckoning podcast for episode 10. I am Brian Cohen. Here with me, as always, is my co-host, Allie Escher. Allie, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I've had better days, but those are kind of the days where it's nice to be podcasting about the challenge and taking a break. So happy to do that. How are you, Brian?
Happy to distract you and entertain you about the happenings in the MTV world.
Well, one of those will definitely be true. Let's see if the entertainment value is there.
Yeah. So how about the fact that the finale is near? Did you catch that in the little end of episode preview?
I got like 5,000 tweets about it.
Yeah.
The finale's not near. That's total bullshit.
I as like everyone else, I thought it said the finale was next week, and I was here for it. I was like, how are we cutting like 12 people next week? And I was ready to see what they're going to do.
I mean, it's just crazy to me that like I believe we've done like a challenge finale podcast in like mid-December, right? Like, just like, yeah. I don't know what they're talking about. But yeah, actually, among the tweets, we got a tweet from Kristen Marie, who sent us a screen grab of the MTV challenge page on Twitter, basically saying like, it's coming soon. It's not next week, but soon.
No.
So if anyone wanted clarity.
There you go. That's the challenge version of clarity soon.
Well, how's this for a spin zone? The finale may not be next week, but that leaves plenty of weeks to engage in our drinking game.
Woohoo. that was a bad woohoo. I'm sorry. That was a very, very bad one. I'll work on it for another point.
I think it was like an appropriate woohoo for the situation.
So what do we have from this past one that happened?
So Kyle Picard wrote to us a disclaimer first. Chief Party Officer, co-chief party officer, said that he's not great at identifying a TJ voice dub, which definitely happened during the explanation of the challenge.
Definitely.
At least.
Yes.
He did count that for one. So we also have some discolored booze. We had four mentions of another show that was popular today. That's probably the burn vote of this week. We have Kara self-promotes as one when she mentioned that she wouldn't do what Ashley did, which I enjoyed as counting that.
Right. Okay. So there's a few.
What do you have to add for this week?
I was going to toss it to you first because I'm still trying to formulate mine.
Okay, so mine's like sort of weak, but I think it could get some play, and it's not like an every week kind of thing. When they cut to a confessional of someone for an explanation, so that happened in this episode when the house said they were going to read the Redemption House said they were going to read the main house, and we cut to Shane for a pop culture explanation of the definition of a read.
Okay, so it's when they cut to someone to explain something that's happening?
Yeah, so like to give a definition. So like I think the read is the perfect example from this episode. Like Jose uses a word in conversation and they cut to a confessional to define the term. I think we'll also count for like Lavender Ladies when they then cut to confessional of Shane breaking down who the Lavender Ladies are. Like anytime they cut for clarity.
Got it. Okay. That makes sense to me. We can do that. We'll add that one. Mine, this I'm sure it can get interpreted in different ways when it happens, but I would say it's when they do slow motion when you don't want there to be slow motion. Hence, when there's vomiting and you don't need to see it slowly coming out of people's mouths. That'll be mine.
I like that one. I follow up question.
It's not great.
Like,
I've had better. It's not great, but that's what I have.
Look, the deeper we get, the yeah. worse they're going to be. I like that they're always inspired by the episode, but they can be extrapolated into other, like they can be applied to other episodes.
Yep.
I think the first thing that came to mind when you said the unwanted slow motion is, when they're like extending a challenge that doesn't need to be extended and like stretching it out to fill time by slowing every single person down, and not right. necessarily like the falls in a trivia competition, because that's enjoyable. But I feel like a lot of times we'll do like extended slow-mo when each person has to run the challenge individually just to like yep. stretch to not make it to the elimination.
Yeah, I think it's basically if they ever use slow-mo and it's not involved someone like landing super hard off a fall is really unnecessary. So we'll go with that. Or if it looks super cool, like when doing one of those like on a truck and they're passing through trucks, those are kind of cool. Other than that, it's not necessary.
I always go back to the like individual water skiing challenge when they did like the clips. This isn't even slow-mo. I just want to complain about this. So I'll never forget when it was like the final challenge and they had you hold on to a bar, basically like water skiing until you fell off. Right. And it was like the what's the torch thing? The rites of passage, but the challenge version. That yes. was just so slow and boring to me. That's what I keep. Maybe it wasn't in slow-mo. My brain watched it in slow-mo.
Yeah, so that'll be just like chug an entire bottle and we'll go from there.
We have another unintentional repeat segment coming up is the episode titles. Did you catch yes. the episode title for this week?
I did catch it and now completely. It's something about House of Cards, right?
Yeah, it literally was House of Cards. Redemption House
well,
of Cards.
Well, there you go.
We have a kind of fun question from Edward Morris. The episode was called Redemption House of Cards. Any prediction on the next few episode titles?
So House of Cards is coming back soon. So maybe they want to try to get in on that. So they should do something with like, they could do like a pun off American Vandal, which is like coming back this weekend. There's got to be a way to incorporate that into an episode.
Am I supposed to know that show? I famously do not watch any good television.
It's a I believe great, I s- oh it's so good. It's like it's a Netflix mockumentary. It was a whole thing. It's hard if I explain it sounds incredibly stupid, but it's very entertaining.
I said this on a podcast with Mike Bloom. It must have been a B&B maybe, I don't remember, or RuPaul's Drag Race, but it was like Veep was my only show that I ever watched like in order to have intelligent or reasonably intelligent conversation with people in the real world. And Mike died because he was like, that's a shitty, like not shitty, but like also lowbrow. But I was like, ah, it's on HBO. It's better than talking about Love Island, which I do.
All right. Well, so if you want one to sound smart, this also comes back this weekend is BoJack Horseman. If you say you watch that, you sound super edgy and cool. You'll get it like, ooh, you watch that. Mention that one.
I know shows like I know BoJack Horseman. I know okay. like if there's an episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour about it, which there was, then I know about it. That's my like prestige go. Podcast as well.
So what do you think? What's a punny one?
So I read this question and I get the advantage of having pulled the questions. But in the 1 second I spent coming up with some suggestions, I have Kyle's Big Banging Theory.
That's not bad.
I have How I Met Your Vendetta.
I like them.
And I just have Friends because I feel like once they use The Affair, just like anything is generic and possible.
Friend. All right. We'll look out for those one at the end.
Yeah. Otherwise, overall, like a lot happened in a lot out of order this episode for a change.
Yeah. Little bits and pieces of different storylines all jumbled together. And usually what happens, you get a lot. Sort of a lot going on at the Redemption House and then stuff going on before the challenge, stuff going on during the challenge. So it's an interesting episode.
This episode and the last few episodes is like when I have a group of people that watch Survivor, right? And when they miss a week, they just are like, oh, I'm not going to watch it. Just tell me what happened. This is like if I watched a regular episode of the challenge and then explained it to someone the next day of what happened. That's like the order of events that occur on the show now.
Yes, I think that's probably fair. So where do you want to start with the calling out of relationships or do you want to just jump around to whatever order we land on?
No, let's start from that. I can barely keep it together going in order of the actual show.
All right. So we have basically Amanda calling out Bananas saying that his relationship with Angela is fake and the Bananas says the same about hers with Joss. And they're both Bananas more so than Amanda get butthurt about it.
I thought this was a real overreaction from Bananas originally, because I read it as like Amanda really was just kind of gently teasing him at first, like, oh, when's the wedding? Can I come? Like very like they have nothing to do in the house but do this kind of shit.
Right. Yeah, I think this could be, you know, I think you probably heard a lot of crap about how fake and probably was so his relationship with Natalie that now he doesn't want to like go through that again. So maybe this is like a sensitive topic for him that he doesn't want to be like, oh, he's in another fake showman just for attention. So he doesn't want to like have that start making waves.
Liz Bonk says, how big is... sorry, I misread. I thought there was a period. How big is Johnny Bananas' ego that he said that every woman wants to be with him, and how right is he? I am disturbed that I find him sort of hot.
Well, I mean, if you know anything about Mr. Bananas, you know his ego has always been quite large. So this is, I would say, the bottom on the totem pole of what makes his ego quite big.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Bananas is right when he's like, you know, they hate her because they ain't her. And I don't think there's a chance in hell that Amanda would be in a flirt manse with Bananas. But I wonder if she was first on the show, maybe. I mean, it doesn't really seem like they have a personality, their personality match. But that's what I never understand about this, like, accusation of a fake relationship. Like, they're genuinely attracted to each other. They clearly like spending time together, and they both gain in the show. Like, what's everyone's problem?
Yeah, it's mutually beneficial in every capacity for everyone involved. No one's getting hurt.
I was getting hurt a little bit because we spent an extreme amount of time in the Redemption House this week, and more than I wanted to.
Yeah, all for people trying to convince people whose decision was so clear that I don't think we didn't need to spend any time. It should have been a formality about who Jose and Devon were going to pick.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. And the whole concept of politicking, while a hilarious segment from CT that I loved, but yes, when Derek is like sincerely politicking with Devon on their night out at the Redemption House, again, not sure why we had to see this. Like, you can't. One person only goes into the game. Like, I didn't really understand. It's like, oh, Devon would want to somehow keep Derek around at Redemption House for her in case she goes back there as like a love interest. Like, to me, it's like a very weak argument of why politicking would work here to be Devon's selection.
Yeah, the arguments didn't really make much sense. And I'm like, I would be fine if they spent, because of all the times to spend at the Redemption House, like, this would conceivably be the time to do it when there's actually a decision to be made. It just so happened that for this one, there was no decision. Like, there was no way they were picking anyone else but the Big Brother people. So, I mean, it sucks for the editors if they wanted to come up with something to show, but I mean, there was just nothing to show.
It's also like, okay, maybe you could have convinced me that there was a fighting chance of a storyline with Faith and Angela being selected, but the fact that the focus was on Derek and Tori or CT and Veronica, who'd never had a chance. But the one thing I did want to see is the fruit ninja scene between Tori and Derek throwing fruit at the sidewalk. Why did we not get a clip of that, of all the time we spent there?
Very unclear. Very unclear. I did enjoy Devon laughing straight in Derek's face. That was entertaining, though.
Oh, when Devon said this ain't it about Derek, I think Devon earned an apology for me for being disappointed that she was cast on the show.
Yeah, she's great. I love her. I think of all the Big Brother people, she's the one who fits the best in this cast of characters, and I hope she stays here.
And it's so funny because I kind of thought like she was sort of the what I viewed as like an older contestant to be first entering the challenge. You know, I'm biased against myself as well. I'm too old to be in law school. But yeah, she has really shown, I think, as a strong female competitor, a strong strategist, making the right plays in terms of not laughing at him, but not being picking a fight with him to his face in the club, and just, or the same thing with Shane, like just kind of going along with it, but giving us in confessional that she really knows what is going on. So yeah. I'll eat crow on that for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the show has been lacking, at least for like a few years ago, lacking strong female competitors and personalities. And now with Devon and Cam and Tori all being like added in, like the pool of people is starting to grow, which is very optimistic.
Oh, let's go back. Let's rewind the tape for a second and talk about Tori. We posed the question. The question was posed to us, like, why is Tori the worst? And we kicked it back to the listeners to say, we don't really know what you're talking about. Like, what's wrong with her? And so we got some great comments. So on robhasawebsite.com, Jason Charbono basically wrote that, A, you just don't like Derek, so Tori gets a hit there. And I think that's fair because she's totally always around fair. Her talking about Derek.
Totally fair.
but that her whole attitude of being the best and Derek sucking, but she doesn't, she plays really scared because she doesn't take the leadership roles. And we've talked about that, but to the point where it's annoying that she knows that Derek should not be in control, but she's letting him, setting him up to fail. She's scared to step up because she doesn't want to tarnish her good name from the last season. And she's just like acting, you know, acting very entitled when she's actually not doing anything about it on her end.
I think all of those points are fair except for the entitled part. I don't see where that comes in the, like, I don't see her acting like she's better than, I mean, if she acts like she's better than Derek, that's because, I mean, she is, but like acting better than anyone else, I don't see that at all from her.
Maybe I added that because I was just skimming a really big paragraph that I'd already read last week. But, you know, like the general attitude, so take that right out of it.
I mean, I think those are all decent points that I think could all come into play about not wanting to tarnish her legacy and look bad and all this stuff, that she may be just writing this off as like a dead season for her. But I don't know. There's also only so much you can do with Derek as your partner. I mean, it's like some of the things, like when the, like one of the things where you had to like climb across like the meat, like he just like fell immediately. So like, I don't know how you can call that on her or whatever.
Yeah, so my response to this comment, which I think it's a fair point, but the reason it's not bothering me, because I don't actually think it's new from Tori. Like, if we're going to act like she didn't play a, quote, scared game on her rookie season, her whole game was, like, integrating with the vets, which is the best thing you can do as a rookie, because it's not really sustainable to be TRK or whatever Hunter's acronym is. You know, like, that'll get you invited back. But if you want to do well, you integrate with Jordan, you integrate with Benaz, especially on her season, and you get to the end, you do well, you get respected, you're socially likable, and you play the safe game through the end. Like, I don't think we look at Tori as somebody who's going to flip all the kill cards and go into the elimination herself.
No. Yeah, and nor should she be. I think you have to just know who you are as a person and as a competitor. I think she plays to herself very well.
So back in the main house, they get the message that the Four Horsemen will be coming back. And I actually did appreciate the flashback to the surveillance, because I feel like I've written off the surveillance. I don't want to speak for you, but probably as like not being that important. But it was a nice reminder that, oh, right, Faith has the information that Kyle and Ashley slept together.
Yeah, no, this was the first time it came into play. And this was, it seemed like the first piece of information that was important and necessary for them to know, because that was something that wasn't all known in the house. Like when they're just showing clips of like a public fight, that doesn't really gain much because it's very clear. But when you're showing clips of like a secret hookup or a secret conversation, that's where it can come into play. And I'm glad we got to see that.
And then who would have thought that Zach would be the one who's like sympathetic towards Kara's romantic situation?
Yeah, I mean, it's weird, but it's also not the same thing at all, right? I mean, him and Jenna are completely together. So if she was hooking up with someone, it would be a completely different thing than Kyle hooking up with someone.
I think because Zach has been on the show when he's not with Jenna, that maybe that's why he can like have sympathy.
Yeah, I guess so. But also I would say like he was at any point in time, I feel like so much more invested in Jenna than Kara's really and Kyle's ever been invested in each other. So, I mean, I guess it's good from Zach to see like a softer side with like his friend, but it's not really, I feel like it's like, you know, not apples to apples, maybe apples to like potato chips.
Fair enough. Both great snacks, you know, but I don't know. I think this scene when they tee up Kara and Zach's deep friendship and then talk about how much Amanda and Kara can't stand each other. Really, the last few weeks we've had, I don't know if this is going to play. It just popped into my head, but it's like the equivalent of a scene of just someone like wringing their hands over and over like, ooh, yes. Like, I just feel like that's foreshadowing, I guess. But the personification of foreshadowing that this is going to be the test that's going to come, I think, between Amanda and Zach that we've been speculating about all season.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's interesting because, like, as we discussed, I think Zach and Amanda are the clear team where, you know, they are going to be in power and there's like a clear difference of who they each want to protect. So I think it will be interesting when it comes down to it, which side wins out.
And especially because it seems that the relationship between the Lavender Ladies and Marie is like an alliance in name only at this point. I mean, we get Shane even saying like, well, I can't put Marie in, but like you guys can. You know, like, right. Oh, I can't do that. But yeah, that sounds good.
It's also tough to have that strong of an alliance bond when really none of them outside of Amanda are ever in power. So there's no real moment where they're shown protecting each other. So that's why I could, like, you could see that alliance crumbling, because, you know, you say you're protecting each other, but when no one's really in position to do so, it's hard to, like, regain that bond.
Right. I mean, that's the whole thing where people say it's, like, advantageous on Survivor to go to tribal council earlier on to prove the trust.
Yep.
But I also think what's happening between Marie and the Lavender Ladies is also social, that Marie is not, like, hanging in the way that she once did.
Oh, yeah. No, totally. Totally.
What did you think? So you're not a RuPaul's Drag Race fan.
I'm not.
Did you get the reference of the library being open? Were you,
no,
you keyed into that?
I felt it was Lavender Ladies all over again. I'm like, did I miss something? Is this a bit of a whole thing that I just, like, blocked out of my mind? No, I missed it.
Yeah, so I know RuPaul lore more than I know challenge lore, so I guess I'm on the wrong podcast. But reading is what? Fundamental. So on RuPaul's Drag Race, there's a mini challenge where the library is opened, and Ru gives each queen one at a time a fun set of sunglasses with which to read her fellow contestants. And I guess Jose and all of the others awkwardly took it upon themselves to interrupt TJ to read the players in the main house.
So is that well known now in, like, pop culture, or they say that, like, or some people, like, what are they talking about?
It's hard for me to know what's well known in pop culture when my pop culture niche is just so deeply specific. So, like, it's definitely well known in my circle. But I think MTV having Shane explain it shows that, like, maybe not.
Okay. I guess it didn't really matter because they just kind of jumped into calling people out. That I think they quickly caught on what was happening, that they didn't need they figured out the context.
I have to say, I think this was a letdown, though. You're going to tell me the library's open. You're going to read them for filth. You're going to use all of these words that mean you're going to. I mean, the reads on RuPaul's Drag Race and the reads in real life are deep, you know, like, they're funny and they're painful and they're true. And I think these were just sort of like, I hate you.
Yeah, I think the only one of substance was the Faith calling out Kyle and Ashley's hookup. I thought that one, like, clearly left the mark and would have ripple effects in the game. The other one's like Natalie. I don't know what she was trying to talk about with Cam. Like, that went absolutely nowhere and blew up in her face quickly. And nothing really else. I mean, and Angela, I guess, saying, like, oh, I get bananas has always been with her. I don't know. The other ones were kind of a dud. The Faith one was the only one that really mattered.
Yeah, you could tell that Natalie had a speech prepared that she just couldn't get through. And so if you're at that point where you're being coached by the people in Redemption, whoever was coaching her should have said, actually, you know what, don't come for Cam. Or if you do, it better be like a quick one liner. Like, you're not going to get a full speech out. Cam's going to, like, flip the script on you immediately.
Yeah. And as we see multiple times, any form of pressure is not where Natalie shines. And unless you have your own microphone, you can talk, you're going to get clapped back on. And that's what happens with Natalie.
And I was really most disappointed in Angela, especially because we get the, like, preview of Bananas being like, oh, I always knew she could turn, and boy, did she turn. And then it's just sort of like, talk to me nice or don't talk to me twice in the confessional. But she tweeted to somebody, I think, was like, maybe if you called people out, they would have responded, because she was like, oh, right. Now you have nothing to say. Now you have nothing to say.
Well,
so she said, oh, yeah.
No, go ahead.
She just tweeted, I said names, babe. My speech went on and on. They only showed bits and pieces.
I mean, yeah, I figured there must have been more to it, because, yeah, there wasn't much there.
But yeah, you know who was really not impressed was TJ.
Yeah, he was disgusted. He's like, I don't come here for the drama. I'm here to just, like, watch people kill each other. Do this stuff on your own time.
And he had to know this was going to happen, but he was just fully disgusted.
Honestly, I could easily see him not knowing this was going to happen. I think he just, like, showed up, he had a teleprompter, he was ready to go, and then someone, like, cut him off, and he's like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do right now.
I don't know. I think they keep teaching. Regardless, if he knew or didn't know, and maybe he didn't, he would have been disgusted either way.
Yeah, this is not what TJ signs up for.
So it sounds like from earlier, you were not at all surprised that they picked Polly and Natalie.
No, I think, like, there would have been had to be something very specific to like the challenge upcoming, or if this or something that happened in the house that like led to a huge fight that would have led to them not picking their Big Brother people.
But do you think it's the right game move for them?
I mean, I think it's fine, because also there's no real easy, like who's like the easiest target, right? Like, I don't think there's like, I mean, I guess CT and Veronica, but then you're up against CT or Faith and Angela, but they seem to be pretty tough. So I don't think there's like an easy target. So you might as well just go with the people that are with you.
So I think that Faith and Angela are the better move, only because, and maybe now that Faith has potentially fallen out with Kyle and Ashley, maybe not so much. But if you look at, all right, so you come in, you see the pyramid. So you see that there's a puzzle. I think they are able to like change their mind at the last minute. I don't see why they wouldn't be. But even if it's not just a puzzle and you think you're at risk, I think Faith and Angela might be a better move. It seems like they have a tight alliance. And I also think that Angela is better connected back at the house with Bananas, etc. Whereas Polly and Natalie, I think, are dead weight to Devon and Jose. I mean, at that point, it might not even matter, just because Polly has like zero leverage in the house.
Right.
At this point, with Devon and Jose, maybe it doesn't matter. Like, maybe you can't really think that far ahead and you just have to protect your main people right away. And maybe it's more important that if you think you're going to go back to Redemption, you kind of get two bites at the apple, because Polly and Natalie are going to reciprocate in the double cross. This might not be tracking or making sense, but I think that maybe there's a good case that can be made for picking Faith and Angela being the right move.
I don't know. I think that the point you ended on, I think that's the one. I think you keep someone there who is 1000% gonna pick you. I think if you pick Faith and Angela, and let's say like Bananas somehow ends up in the Redemption House, like, I don't know, I think there could be a scenario where Angela wants to save him or something like that. So I think you just pick the team that's clearly gonna then save you. And it's also, again, like Polly and Natalie are not some like major powerhouse that you're super scared of going up against them. That they were already lost two eliminations. This is now their third. So I think it's the right decision.
Yeah, no, and I don't even mean in terms of them being the most beatable. I just mean in terms of like their social capital in the house is almost zero, and so is yours. But Faith and Angela, I think, have a little bit more. So if you're going to keep an alliance member, maybe you keep the one who can maybe protect you with the powers that be.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess there's something to be said for that, but I don't know. I think that's a little bit of more of a roll of a dice for like a long term plan.
Right. Devon and Jose are going to be sent in every time. But we lose three teams right off the bat. Finally, I also have to eat crow on this. I said that Joss had already contributed the best thing he's going to contribute. I stood by that with the rubber gloves. I still thought that was not important enough. Joss's impression of CT is the best thing that we've seen from him.
Yeah, he does well. He's all of a sudden developing into a decent confessional guy. Look at him. He's got his one for the episode.
I would not go that far.
He's got his, but he's like a low volume, high quality. He like is one or two, and then that's it. But they're entertaining.
I would challenge you to go back and see the other confessionals. When he has zero confessionals, you can only imagine they're still pulling him in for interviews. So his like batting average, I don't know sports, but he's like hitting home runs 1% of the time, which is not good. But the confessionals they aired and that did air in the beginning were not good either.
Well, I think he's growing into them. He's growing into them.
It's not enough to keep me on board, but I will say that I was wrong about him peaking whenever that was.
Yep. But yeah, the CT impression was gold. Good job by him.
Anything more to say about the three that we've lost?
No, nothing really. I mean, not a big Redemption House guy, so I'm happy that we finally get to see some teams go. But again, it takes away from the moment when they actually get eliminated.
Which, and I still think that this four horsemen thing should, I guess there were five horsemen, but that should end. Oh, it's the four players to get elimination. Sorry. Okay, whatever. Whoever loses that, I don't think should go back to the Redemption House. I've said it once, I'll say it a million times.
Yeah, I mean, so you want all that? That means all three are still in the Redemption House?
No, I want them to leave.
Just all leave. That's fine with me. Yeah, they all can go.
which is maybe not what I said before. I don't know. But how I felt now is that Paulie and Natalie should have gone home.
It's honestly, at this point, I'm like rooting for Natalie and Paulie to always get picked and lose because I want to see how many eliminations they could possibly lose in one season. Like, if they somehow won like 0-6, like that would just be incredible.
Somebody, I didn't pull the question, but somebody was like, what if, oh no, I did pull it. It's a tweet from Tom Palmer, two-part question. The first part is, if Paulie and Natalie ended up winning the season, would that be the craziest reality TV outcome ever?
Yeah, like, what if, like, Jose and Davon go back to Redemption House, 4 weeks later, we do this again, one of them pick it, they pick each other, Paulie and Natalie lose, 3 weeks later, they do it one more time, they come back in with, like, the final four, and then they win. Like, that would be amazing.
And so you would be willing to watch until December for that outcome?
Well, I'm already prepared for that, so I might as well root for chaos along the way.
All right, so what did you think of this elimination, though? Not the people, the apparatus.
I thought it was interesting. I mean, it's something they've never done before. I like when they kind of mix puzzle with some form of physicality where you have to like balance and move around. I didn't mind it. I didn't understand exactly why they needed to keep switching off. I'm not sure what that gained, but I mean, it was an interesting one.
Yeah, I think if one thing the switching off adds, just like, I don't know, the alternative would be like, okay, Jose and Davon solve the puzzle first, then you have their time, and if time expires and you don't solve it, that like how the eating plates of eating happen, where you just had to hit 7. I think it's a little bit more interesting to do it in little spurts. It seems like in like case there's like in the event of a blowout. But yeah, I didn't like this challenge at all. That's not what you're saying. That's what I'm saying.
That's fair.
I just didn't think it was, I think the puzzles are too complicated where you like can't really follow at home along at home. Maybe I'm watching them too small of a screen. But yeah, it was a lot of spinning, multiple sides. I didn't really get why they couldn't be on it at the same time.
Yeah.
Like that would have made more sense to me. Oh, is that what you're saying? Yeah. I'm like really confused today. Today's a bad day for me. I thought you meant like why they didn't just do one puzzle at a time. Now it makes sense. Yes, I agree with you then. I'm sorry, everyone. Edit this out. No one who edits this. but yeah, I just didn't think it was that interesting. I get what you're saying about the balance of strength, but I didn't really think that mattered so much. And it was just sort of like a press to do the puzzle. Maybe the time blocks to me added like an artificial element of anxiety that you want to see in an elimination. Jeremy Hamilton had the same question as you that I didn't understand. Why couldn't all four players be on the spinning puzzle pyramid at the same time? Seemed really weird to me that they were trading off. Am I missing something?
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm the one missing something, Jeremy, not you.
No real clear answer, but leave it to the challenge to make a puzzle a little odder than it needs to be.
Can you also explain to me the advantage or disadvantage of going first or second as Jose and Davon got the chance to choose?
I mean, if you each have to go the same amount of times, I guess you'd rather go second, right? So that way, if you finish, then it's just over. And then, you know, if the other person finishes first, you have the chance to match. But I guess if no matter what, you always get a chance to answer, I guess you'd obviously rather go first because then you might get an extra try. But I don't know exactly what the full rules laid it out as.
Yeah, at first when they gave them the choice, I thought like, oh, if they're giving you a choice, maybe you get, and they're picking first, you must not get a chance to answer.
Right.
But then as we saw, they do. So then I can't imagine why Jose wanted to go first, because if you go second, I think the way it worked is you get one chance to answer, and if you've gone second, they don't get a chance to answer.
Yeah, but, then it's fine going second.
No, but they chose to go first, which I think is insane because you can at least watch the puzzle and try to strategize and not just have to use your time strategizing. So I guess it didn't end up mattering, but I thought that was a really puzzling choice.
But very odd.
I'm going to jump ahead quickly. Instead of, I have a section from Paulie's Us Weekly. Also Will from America did make you a drop,
yes.
But I don't know how to work it. I'm sorry, Will. I did promise you that I wouldn't know how to do it, so I don't feel too bad. But
he said this to me also, but I have it. I don't know what to do with it, though. But I don't know. We'll figure it out.
But this isn't even that part. This is, I went to Paulie's Us Weekly blog for information, not for fun. So this is, I'll read a fun segment later. This is for pure information.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to preface this by giving you, by requesting that you appreciate. Oh my God, I can't do this today. Anyway,
you're doing a great job.
I'm just going to drop that. What I think is amazing about this paragraph is how he's like complimenting production and criticizing production.
Interesting.
Pretty good job, Polly. Okay. Watching this show is the first time I've ever watched myself, so I truly never knew the meaning of, quote, TV magic until I witnessed how my first ever elimination was edited, as well as this one. This elimination was actually neck and neck, and it came down to one piece being wrong as our time ran out. I had to stop solving my puzzle to walk over and solve Natalie's puzzle, which we completed. By the time I got back to mine, I had 10 seconds to find the one piece that I had wrong.
Hmm. Okay.
So Paulie is saying, like, wow, what a great job production does of making it look like I'm not doing awesome when I was doing amazing. And also he throws in, I never watched Big Brother. Or X on the Beach.
He's bred for everything. He's bred for this.
He's not bred for watching television. And I think it means I'll only watch myself if I'm getting paid to write a recap of it.
That sounds about right. That sounds like Paulie.
So Jose and Devon win. Great. I think that's a better outcome than Paul. I'm not ready to see Paulie come to blows yet.
Yeah, I hope he wins the next one. That's what I'm hoping for.
What else happens? Help me out.
Not really. We jump pretty, quickly to the next challenge, other than Hunter now saying he can't trust Ashley, because if you lied about this, what else could you lie about? But I that'll be something that I think develops more like next episode or further down the line. But that was really it until we jumped to the actual challenge.
Oh yeah, but who do you think's right? Do you think like Hunter has a right to be mad at Ashley for lying about kikiing with Kyle?
I think so, because they are. It's not like, I don't think he has a right in terms of like if they had like their past relationship, but as like your partner, you should know where your partner's allegiances lie. And without knowing that, it make it more difficult when you're forming other alliances and making voting decisions. So, also like it makes no sense for Ashley to lie. Like just admit to it. Like it's clearly going to come out. Like it made no sense for her to lie.
Yeah, but it's like Challenge House is kind of like high school, and it's sort of like, oh, did you kiss him? And like you're like, no, I didn't. And then they showed a clip of like Kyle also denying that he ever slept with her. Like, I don't know that this has really like impacted Ashley's allegiances. Like, it'd be one thing if they were like together in the house and not telling anyone. It seems like they just hooked up once. Like, I don't know that she necessarily owes it to Hunter. And yes, of course it's gonna come out, but there are some things that don't come out on the challenge, and if you don't talk about them, maybe they don't have to come out more than you'd want them to. So I don't know. I get Hunter's point, but I'm not like fully convinced that she needed to tell him at this stage of their relationship.
Mm-hmm. I think it could have been a good bonding moment for them, especially since they came in a little bit late. They have something to kind of like catch up on. I think you don't really want dissension amongst the two of you.
Yeah, we'll see. I think it's an overreaction from Hunter again for a change to like be like, there's now zero trust.
Yeah, I mean, zero trust is strong, but I think, yeah, a little bit upset is fine.
And then we get Kara's reaction to it as well. What I can only imagine is her preliminary reactions. I'm sure we're going to get reactions to this the rest of the season.
Yeah, Kara's become, I've been in like a deep Jersey Shore rewatch. So she's become the Sammy of like being done. Hashtag done. D-O-N-E done. Like every episode with Kyle. And next week she'll be right back on to like butter him up and get back with him. It's like annoying at this point. Like, come on, Kara, be better.
Also, maybe Kara, who is now going to hook up with a guy for the second time who has a girlfriend, maybe shouldn't be citing girl code. I don't know that that's the most favorable thing to point to for her.
Yeah, Kara being hypocritical. Never.
Technically she's not hooking up with a guy's ex, a girl's ex.
Right. So good job by her.
And this is maybe not the best challenge to discuss as Duncan for dinner as we approach dinner time. Yes. On the East Coast here as we record this.
So this challenge, one partner is strapped. They're big on the strapped upside down by their feet. That's been a big theme the past 2 weeks. One partner is strapped upside down by their feet. The other one is controlling them, having to bob in the water for little packages of food. And you have to get as many as you can. I think it was 3 minutes, 15 minutes, 10 minutes. I don't remember the exact time, but you have to get as many as you can in the time frame. And the other partner has to eat the things in them.
I always hate the gross food challenge. I mean, I know it's like a rite of passage and it happens every season. It grosses me out. This was like kind of a decent twist on it. What did you think about the additional element?
No, that's the one thing I like. I don't like when it's just like straight up sit at a table and eat and then puke. This I liked because it added a different layer to it. It added just something new to this same thing. Also, I don't like it as much. I like it more here than in a final. In the final, I'd rather it be like the normal, like challenge, competitive, like puzzles, all that type of stuff. So I'd rather them do it here. And I like this little twist that they added to it.
There was another little twist that they added that did not make air. So you wouldn't know this because Cara tweeted it. But she wrote, "Hey, Jose, how about the challenge not thinking those three extra grenade plates you had to eat before your time even started were important enough to make edit? Tilt, laugh, cry emoji. Shit you didn't see. Zach and Shane got ping pong balls and assigned penalty plates to Jose."
Interesting. Very odd.
I saw those. There were little red balls also in the water with the bean bags, but I just didn't think about them.
So why wouldn't they show that?
I guess it didn't affect the outcome at all.
I guess so. I don't know. That's weird to like go through all that and do that and not show it. Especially because, I don't know, I figure you're going to be pissed if you get like a penalty assigned to you and might come back later on. I don't know. Odd.
I think... One, they definitely did it intending to show it, but I think Jose is always going to hate Shane and Zach anyway, so maybe like the way that it came out didn't affect the game, and they determined we needed to see more of the Redemption House.
Because that's always a necessity.
So which of these foods, sheep intestines, chicken feet, or an egg sack from the snookfish, would you be most excited to try?
I mean, I guess you got to go with the chicken feet, right? Because at least it probably tastes like chicken, you would hope. I don't know. I feel like that's probably the easiest.
Yeah, I mean, chicken feet, I feel like, is the most common, like, known to us in the U.S. as something people eat. Like, the egg sack of a snookfish, that's not sushi to me. I'm sorry, Cam.
No.
And the thing about these gross food challenges is, like, it's not even that, like, the item is gross. The item is gross. But it's also prepared in, like, the most gross possible way. Like, it appears to just be, like, boiled until rubbery.
Yeah, and it's also just, like, sitting out there, right? Isn't that also, like, it's not coming straight out of the oven or something like that. It's, like, sitting in the hot sun for a while.
And then also what hit me most about the ankle part of the challenge is I'm not great at guess your weight. Like, I would not have success as a carny or anything like that, but... Bananas has to weigh more than 180 pounds, no?
I think he's because he's shorter than you think. I think he's like 5'9 or something like that. Like he's not like, I don't think he's tall. I'm pretty sure like he's not like that tall of a person. So I think that like lowers the weight.
All right. Fair enough. Because I'm like, these behemoths have to be more than that. I mean, 80 pounds is a fine amount to weigh, but the height I did not consider.
I'm trying to pull up a picture of Tony next to Bananas. I think Tony's pretty tall. I think Tony's like 6'3"-ish. So I want to see like a picture of them next to each other. Let's see.
I mean, I said I'd have no success at a carnival, so there you go.
Well, the pictures are of them sitting down. So that does not help.
I mean, yes, I recall Tony being taller than Bananas. I guess in just my head, like Tony's 7 foot, so therefore Bananas is like 6'5", and then everything goes down from there.
Sounds about right.
So we have the way that the challenge is structured, as you set up, is Ashley and Hunter, Zach and Amanda, Bananas and Tony all get all 11 bags. So they have the opportunity to eat all of the plates, and it will be whoever eats the most, the fastest. Edward Morris said, "What did you think of this competition? Shouldn't people who got more bags eat less?"
Interesting. So like, how would that work? So if you get like the more you get, the less you have to eat. I feel like logistically, I don't know how that would work for the way they had this set up, though.
So I think it would be, and I haven't fully thought this through for a change. It would be like if you got all 11 bags, you'd get 5 plates, right? You'd be in the first tier, whatever. And then whoever eats the 5 the fastest wins, and the other people would be like obligated to finish, and how many they had left over would have them determine the loser.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm fine with this. I don't know. I guess you could tweak like that. You know, I think it's unnecessary. Quick update, by the way, on Johnny Bananas' IMDb page. They list him as 5'9 and 3/4.
Oh, you're close. Very close. There you go. A true fan.
That's how I roll.
All right, so we also had Gregory Contreras said, this past episode, Kara and Cam were the only girls who had to carry their teammates' body weight. Are you surprised they weren't given an equalizer? Can a girl-girl team make the final with this kind of format?
I think they definitely can. I think they've been trying to structure these challenges so they aren't so drastically slanted towards guys. I mean, we've seen Faith and Angela win once, so I think clearly they have a chance to do very well. There aren't many girl girl teams in total, and one of them has Marie, so I don't think that's like a fair sample size.
Yeah, it's hard for us to really appreciate for our bar couches how important the weight distribution was in this challenge. Like, I think it didn't look that bad, but then you had like Shane being like, Nelson couldn't keep me up, like I was gonna drown, and maybe it was when Tony mentions the 180-pound banana. So I think from my television perspective, it looked fair enough. Do I think they should have had an equalizer? I mean, what's the equalizer on that? Based on weight or just based on gender? Because then you have like Shane and Nelson. Like, if Shane wanted to be the one pulling Nelson, can he get an equalizer because Nelson is heavier?
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's okay. Speaking of, though, how many are there any girl goal teams left? I just realized because Faith and Angela are no longer with us. So who else is left?
Cam and Kayla.
Cam and Kayla. Okay, so there's the one. Yeah, so they can go far.
And they did. I mean, the eating was the struggle for them. But I guess if you look at the top teams, right? Okay, Ashley and Hunter, that's a giant dude and a tiny girl. Zach and Amanda, that's a giant dude and a tiny girl. But you have Bananas and Tony. So mm-hmm. I don't know that weight distribution was everything. I think it's just the nature of having mixed gender and same sex teams.
Yep.
Together.
Totally.
So we get a cliffhanger where Seven Plates makes you save. So we see a lot of teams tapping out after Hunter and Ashley win, and they have Seven Plates eaten, which kind of made this boring. I think that's maybe what Edmo could be getting at with reversing it. But I don't have the emotional or mental capacity to work that out. But we end with Kaylee and Cam and Kara and Marie being at three plates each with like 2 minutes left.
Yeah. And not to be like a technical Timmy, but I think really they only need to eat six, because if you eat six, then you eat six quicker than Kara and Marie, then you should also be safe. But I don't know. It's neither here nor there. But yeah, so we're down to those two teams.
Yes. Fair point.
Yeah.
Do you have a prediction of who's going to be in elimination? I'm sorry, purged.
It seemed like, I don't know, it seemed like Kara was like calm, so I would lean toward her being able to pull this one off, but not very strongly convicted.
Yeah, I mean, it appeared that Kaylee and Cam were like so far behind, but I do believe the yes shriek at the end as they went to the credits was Kaylee, even though it does not look possible. But Pauly Calafiore told us there's a magic of editing. You never know.
You never know. It could be like when they cut away from the truth booth. You always hear those screams. You don't know what those screams mean.
Liz Bonk says, does MTV really think that we need a cliffhanger in order to watch the next episode? Editing like this makes me more annoyed at the show and less likely to watch future seasons. I will finish this season, though, since I have invested half my life to it already.
I mean, that's it right there. I already have you. So what the hell's the difference?
Which is what she's saying. Like, yeah. Why do we need a cliffhanger? Are you really up? And we've talked about this. Like, I never really understand a cliffhanger. I think if you're going to fall off the show, you're going to fall off whether or not you know who eats the most plates, especially because you can Google it next week without watching the show.
That's the thing that I love about like Survivor and Big Brother. Like, they just, you know what you're getting each episode. It's going to end like exactly how you think it's going to end. And then you go towards the next one. I don't know why so many other shows that deviate from that that simple formula.
So we have another question from Tom Palmer. He says, who do you think would be willing to steal the money? He said, obviously Bananas and ... So did you notice that in the mid-season review, we found out that there's going to be another friend or foe money split, which is now the Love Island season one money split.
Yeah. I mean, this is now. So the previous split was, I think it was like 375,000, right? Was that, I think it was just about that. I think what Bananas took home. So now you're up to 1 million. I mean, in all honesty, like you have to be really close with someone to like give, like not give them, but not take $500,000 is a lot of money. So I don't know.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think the two non-numerical or non-monetary considerations are, one, your future relationships in the game and your earning potential based on those relationships in the future. So I guess that is monetary, but also your reputation. Like Bananas is fine getting lambasted for stealing Sarah's money. People love him even more for it. He's a villain. Kara steals Marie's money. I mean, they're not getting to the end, but Kara's maybe not going to be able to leave her house. Even with people hating Marie, like Kara can't do well. I'm trying to think, if Cam steals money, is she going to be applauded or is she going to be completely villainized for the rest of her life? Not sure. Mm-hmm.
It's so tough. I don't know. Yeah. It'll be very different. I think Bananas, do you think Bananas would do it again? Like he did it once. He dealt with all that backlash, all whatever. Do you think he would do it again?
No chance is Bananas taking $500,000 from a father of two who has become pretty beloved in the challenge fandom, who's supposed to be like his little brother. That to me is not even Bananas' brand of shit.
Do you think Tony would do it to him?
I think Tony should do it to him. I don't think Tony has it in him.
Yeah, I think when push came to shove, I don't think anyone's going to do it. But God, I mean,
I think Tony would be forgiven for doing it to Bananas. Oh, like, I think Tony could really get away with it.
Definitely. I think, because I mean, he has the clearest out, right? I think you could say, like, you know, you did this to someone, you now karma's coming back around and you get to see what it's like. And plus, he could just say, like, I don't know, I need the money, like, for my kids. And what is it? Was it like,
yeah,
no,
exactly.
Like, no, you don't need the money for your kids. So interesting.
I could see like Shane and Nelson doing it, but like Shane would do it.
Shane would do it.
But he's not getting to the end.
Shane would definitely do it. I don't think Nelson would, but I think Shane would. I don't know. I don't think
anyone
else.
Devon and Jose, no. Pauly and Natalie, no.
I think Pauly, if the producer got in Pauly's ear, I think he could be talked into it.
Fair enough. I think they've gotten really close, though, but you're right. And producer manipulation, notwithstanding, I don't think he would do it.
Yeah.
Brad and Kyle. Brad might be legitimately tempted because Brad he talks be about providing for his future, family's future, but I think he would be more like, I need to be an example for my sons.
Right.
So, yeah, it's interesting. I think you're right that nobody's going to do it, or the people most likely to get to the end are not going to do it.
Yeah, I don't think Zach and Amanda would do it to each other, or Joss and Sylvia. I don't know, because I don't know enough about like Joss and Sylvia, but I don't think it's gonna happen. I think whoever wins, I think this time around it's gonna be split.
So we have a number of 5-star reviews up by 500%.
Yay.
So thank you to Carl's Barkley, Maggie Ray 47, Briogs, Kiss Bleep, bleep, bleep. Your name's inappropriate, but thank you. Alyssa R7. So thank you so much.
There you go. Appreciate it. Woo.
If you want to let us know you're out there, you could do so at robhiswebsite.com/challengeitunes.
Please do.
Weak. And I have Pauly's. I don't know. Should I try to like do bullshit production value and play the drop just up to my phone?
Yeah, go for it. Let's see how it goes. Let's see how it goes.
Okay, here we go.
This is me, you know, being sincere right now.
What time is it?
It's Pauly's calling. I think I'm pulled back from being a badass a little bit.
So what time is it?
It's Pauly's calling.
Shout out to you trolls.
Could you hear that?
It's hard to make out some of the words. Like I heard Pauly's corner, and then I heard shout out to the haters at the end. But I mean, the beat's great. I love the beat. I was like rocking on my seat.
So it's called Polly's Column.
Oh, that was cool.
And I think he says shout out to the trolls.
Oh, so I did not hear anything correctly.
So it was a fail. It's pretty great. Thank you to Will from America. We loved it.
Yeah, it was great.
So Polly's Column on Us Magazine. Someone pointed out that I keep saying US Magazine, which kills me. And I know I say it.
Yeah, but
it's So the intro paragraph, here we go. Another week, another recap that's bound to piss people off for at least or at least have them try to use a bunch of mean girls gifs on Twitter. Well, in my best Gretchen Wieners voice, I can't help that I'm popular. There also a typo in that. There hasn't been this much controversy over someone's words on MTV since Eminem dropped the Marshall Mathers LP in 2000.
There you go.
You'd think I was a veteran instead of a rookie. Take a drink. With how much energy everyone is spending dissecting my analysis on these episodes, including us. I'm flattered. Really, I am. There you go.
I like that you started to break into his voice a little bit at the end. A little bit.
Which is really, I'm never trying to do an impression. It's just when something's written in a Polly way. Yeah. I like get into character, but this wasn't that Polly. To me, quoting Mean Girls is not really that Polly, and making like a specific Marshall Mathers reference and the year that was dropped, like that to me is very like Googleable, or you know, somebody told me to put this in.
Right. I can't believe he actually does this. It's amazing.
Kara does one too, and Marie does one from Betches Love This, but I'm only interested in the man, the myth.
Read for this.
Polly Calafiore. So we have some other tweets. Shout out to our digital communications manager who is evacuating from the hurricane right now.
Stay safe.
So sending our best to you. So I pulled some things. Shady Shane tweeted a gif of Davon saying F-U-B and wrote, anyone order a side of hypocrisy? Kara, so there was some beef. Also, some beef popped off in continuation of the beef we covered last week, but that's stale beef now. Kyle got involved with Polly, so you could check that out. Or Liana Borges actually read it when I guested it on the RHAP BB&B, so you can go listen to that there. That was absolute recklessness. So Kara said the challenge tweeted Zach's partner could jeopardize one of his strongest alliances. And then an article about this episode, but the issue with Amanda and Kara. And Kara wrote, I never said Zach's name. I've been a loyal friend. That's a rare find on these challenges. I'm a strong competitor and I'm going to be one of his groomsmen when he marries Jenna. Why would he want to F that up for his miserable, hateful partner?
Ooh, shots fired.
We've seen Kara the challenge champion. We've seen Kara the jealous ex. We've seen Kara the cheater. I'd love to see Kara the groomsman.
Yeah. I wonder if Zach will ask her when she's in like the Big Brother house.
Then Kara wrote, oh, hey, Marie, are these the friends, in quotes, you wanted to save? They have your back, right? LMAO, tilt emoji, tilt, laugh cry emoji, tilt, laugh cry emoji, tilt, laugh cry emoji. Thank God I have Zach. Gay. Marie wrote, notice Kara struggled to keep me up off the bat. I'm practically drowning before the horn blows. And she quote tweeted and said, you're at least 30 pounds heavier than me. I'm strong, but I had to lock my legs under the crane or my body went up with you. You sucked, Marie, or rather you didn't suck enough with those bags. So stop making excuses. Take the L.
Take it.
Stop making excuses, Brian.
It's a good phrase.
Marie wrote, haven't done anything wrong to you, Kara. All it took was a 7-week stint shacking up with Panatalie to decide you wanted to hate me again. Everyone will see the person I was to you, and everyone will see the person you truly are. I'm done addressing you and your brand. Godspeed. And then Marie gets a 1,000 on the zero chill meter. She tweets, this season does a decent job of showing my chill factor. It's when people forget how chill I really am and try to deny me of it that I get pissed off and blow up Twitter. Sorry for that. Stop acting like you've never enjoyed my company and I'll stop acting like I care. You know who I am.
I feel like that was like a subtweet at me.
I mean, it's just like People forget how chill I am, and then I blow up.
That's the mind of Marie in full action.
And in other news, Corey and Cheyenne have been confirmed that they will be with their daughter, Ryder K, on Teen Mom OG. So if you want some more Cheyenne, that's where she'll be with Bristol Palin and the rest of the funky OG bunch.
Yeah, good for them. Happy to see they're doing well.
That's all I got from the interwebs.
You all can subscribe at robswebsite.com/challenge. iTunes, follow me on Twitter at @ColinBryan_. Follow you
at Lash Tweets.
We'll be back next week for episode 11. Until then, have a good one.